I am speaking with State Representative Sean McCann. As the Michigan legislature has opened a new session. However, work will not truly begin until after Governor Snyder's State of the State address. Thank you very much for coming in.
Nice to be with you, Gordon. Thank you.
We are speaking on Thursday, which means that yesterday there was the vote to reelect House Speaker Jace Bulger. Two Democrats voted against reelecting him as Speaker. You voted for. Why did you cast that vote?
It was a very difficult vote to cast, and I think that what we did is looked at it and the fact that this has been a ceremonial vote strictly and a matter of formality and not a reflection upon what's transpired really in the last 2 years. It's an acknowledgement that in this case the Speaker was reelected in his district and was reelected by his caucus. He would become the Speaker, and did we want to start the year off with really a very partisan note, or did we want to say, okay, let's see if we can start this day well and move forward, and we know we're going to agree to disagree on things.
In his speech to the members of the House yesterday, Jace Bulger said that disagreeing with someone on a single issue should not taint the discussion of the next issue or the resolve to deliver results for Michigan. Obviously, he's making some sort of a reference there to the right to work bill, which passed in the lame duck session. Do you agree?
Well, I think that you can't operate in a vacuum as a legislator. So if that's the suggestion, and I don't know if it is, then I don't know that I would agree with that. You can't, I think, for example, if you took the example of how the so-called right to work issue was passed through the legislature in the lame duck marathon session, that I think certainly affected, for example, how much trust and cooperative spirit really was displayed. And to the extent that it was not. And so I think that that has to be borne in mind going forward. You can't just wipe the slate clean and say, nothing's ever happened up to this point. Therefore, we all trust each other and we're all going to be able to work hand in hand from this point forward.
The House Democratic leader, Tim Grimmel, talked yesterday about extending an olive branch of symbolic bipartisanship. How do you go from symbolic bipartisanship to real bipartisanship?
Well, I think that real bipartisanship is when both sides of the table or both sides of the aisle are brought to the table and asked in a genuine spirit what they have to contribute to the policy discussion of the day. We haven't really seen much of that in the past 2 years. It's been one-party control in Lansing, and there's been very little, if any, involvement of folks from our side of the aisle in the caucus discussions that have gone on.
So how would you propose the two sides do come together? Are there some issues, for instance, where you do have some of the same goals? One of the things that Jace Bulger talked about yesterday was early childhood education. There may be some differences about how to pay for it, but do you have some of the same goals about expanding that and improving it?
I hope so. I think it's great that people would embrace how important early childhood education is in Michigan. I think the issue does become how do you pay for that? So often the devil is in the details with these things. But conceptually, you know, I think everybody agrees that we need better jobs in Michigan and more of them. I think we need to cut corrections costs and incarcerate less people, spend less money on it, front load dollars into early childhood education. But, you know, it's how you get there and at what cost are those things done and how are they carried out? Is it through private prisons, for example, which or charter schools, which are both sort of profit motive driven? Those are more difficult questions.
Would you also be in that same spot on the issue of roads? There's probably general agreement that Michigan needs better roads, but there's probably going to be a pretty big difference over how to pay for that, right?
Well, I think absolutely. The question is going to be, what do we do about this? So often in this kind of a discourse, especially with transportation, people want their roads fixed, but perhaps they're not willing to pay for them. But there are other dynamics similar to that in state budget considerations. So I think that proposals need to be brought. They need to be evaluated. Where I think we start from is if there are going to be additional revenues asked for, how fairly are people going to be treated in that equation?
What the governor proposed last time was raising vehicle registration fees. What do you think about that proposal?
Well, I think that out of the gate was a non-starter. It didn't even get support on the Republican side of the caucus. So, it didn't really formulate into a bill that I was able to look at in close detail. So I think that the sense of it was that was going to be unfair to a lot of middle-class folks.
But conceptually speaking, I mean, who ultimately pays for roads? Because the way that money was raised for it last time was to increase the gas tax. The problem is, of course, people are buying more fuel-efficient cars now. So the money from the gas tax has dwindled. If you're going to find it from somewhere, people who do register a vehicle at least use the roads. So they would be paying for roads that they're going to drive on. If you don't get it from there, where do you go to get it if it's not gas tax, if it's not vehicle registration?
These are the great questions and the great debate. And I mean, this is what's going to transpire. I mean, not that I don't have all the answers to those questions, but I mean, these are the conversations that everybody's going to have. I mean, quite frankly, a mileage user fee makes the greatest amount of sense. But how do you accomplish that in a free society? Are you going to track everybody's vehicle, where it goes, the miles that it puts on our roads? Toll roads are a concept that meet with a lot of mixed reaction because we have a lot of truck traffic that goes interstate and a lot of trucks that do, you know, probably more damage to our roads than cars do. So
the toll roads are used in Illinois and Indiana, neighboring states.
That's right, exactly. So, I mean, I think that what needs to happen is a lot of things need to be put on the table and then see where they go, see if they even get started. Again, you know, we started off saying that this is, a legislature and a governor's office controlled by one party. So really, if this is their priority and something that they think is important to make happen, they're going to need to push that on their agenda first and foremost. And we can agree with them, but we need to see what the proposal is for how to pay for it. And are they willing to pay for it?
Since it is a legislature controlled by the Republicans with a governor who is a Republican, what is the role for Democrats in the next 2 years at least in terms of advancing the priorities of your constituents who voted for you and for other Democrats throughout the state?
Well, I think that the role is to always advance the priorities of all the citizens of Michigan and what the views of my constituents are. And so that means that we have a different direction that we think Michigan should go in. And we're going to talk about that probably for the next 2 years or whenever we get the chance. And I hope we get the chance to talk about it. But, you know, some things that come to mind are more funding for education, certainly not cuts in public education, how we get to creating more jobs in Michigan, if they're going to be part-time jobs. Are people going to have to work three part-time jobs to get into prosperity, or are they going to have one good job with benefits to help support a family? And we're going to talk about how democracy is improved. Can we get more people voting, for example, in Michigan? That's a big piece that we're going to talk about. So, I mean, those are the things that our caucus is going to continue to talk about, and we don't shy away from that just because we're not the party in power.
More people voting, is this a reference to some of the ideas such as check boxes for citizenship and that sort of thing?
For me, it's more, that is an issue that's sort of seen its day. Unfortunately, didn't ultimately get resolved to my satisfaction, but I think, you know, my concern is about involvement in democracy and participation. There are some really good ideas, such as early voting, no reason absentee voting, that would encourage more people to participate in our democracy. And those are things that are important to me and that I plan to advocate for in the next 2 years.
Our listeners may have recently heard Zach Gorchow, editor of the Gongwer News Service, on our station say that the Democrats' main goal is defeating Rick Snyder when he runs for re-election in 2 years and taking control of the legislature in that same election to undo what the Republicans have done. Is he right?
I think that we will hopefully put up a strong candidate against the governor and that person would defeat the governor. He has not embodied the priorities of the Democratic Party, and so we would like to see a different governor, no question about it. We want to repeal the Snyder pension tax on seniors. We want to not see education funding cut as it has been and the school aid fund raided to pay for other budget priorities. So absolutely we would want to see a change in the governor's office.
But I suppose the question for citizens is, how does that affect what you do now when you're supposed to be doing your job as a state legislator, as opposed to when you're trying to keep that job as a state legislator or try to help someone else get elected governor in a couple of years? Does it affect how you do your job? Do you try to roadblock some of the things that the Republicans in Congress have been accused of?
Well, part of this actually gets into, better democracy, which is one of the things I've talked about and will continue to talk about is the issue of gerrymandering. And maybe that's a bit far from, where your question starts us at, but I come to it fairly quickly because you have a dynamic both in Washington and in the state of Michigan whereby we've drawn these safe legislative districts for so many people that it doesn't promote a moderation of discourse. It doesn't promote people seeking good policy compromises. It causes legislators, I think, to be able to feel fairly safe in their partisan camps and thus not have the kind of cooperation that we need at the state and national level. So that's why you get, I think, so much citizen frustration over gridlock and divisive conversations and policies that are far apart, where people are far apart on how they feel about policies because you've got this dynamic going on. So that's actually one of the things that is a very interesting question that I'm going to be looking at, because you basically have a legislature that has been able to draw their own districts. The process of redistricting was done in the last 2 years entirely to the benefit of one party, and we've seen a situation both state and nationally where more votes were cast for the Democratic Party across the state than the Republican Party. Yet the legislature is controlled by the Republican Party. So I mean that I think, and I mentioned parties, but I'm quick to say that it shouldn't be that dynamic in either direction. I don't think it's right in either way. If it were the Democrats controlling the legislature, but the majority of the state popular vote had been Republican, that shouldn't be the way it is either.
I can't recall off the top of my head what percentage of the vote you got in the last election, but it was sizable.
74%.
74. And the election before was not quite that lopsided.
It was a non-presidential year election,
right?
So the turnout's lower.
The turnout's lower.
Still pretty strong.
But so. but the district was somewhat different.
Mm-hmm,
and if anything, your district was redrawn in a way that makes it more likely for a Democrat to win what was already a safe Democratic district.
Absolutely.
Would you sit here right now and say that no district should be quite that Democratic or that Republican, where 70% of the vote is almost certain to go one way or the other?
I absolutely would. Absolutely. That's what I think is part of the problem. I can't tell you how many conversations I had with folks of all stripes before the election and to this day who say, why are things so divisive? Why is this atmosphere so charged? And why can't you get along and make policy that makes more sense for people in the middle?
Is the right to work issue one that is now at least on the back burner? In other words, perhaps if Democrats are going to overturn it, they need to win elections, need to win control of the legislature. Or are there other avenues that that are available to the Democrats? Recall elections, a challenge to the law seems like it may be very difficult to do since it was tucked into an appropriation bill. But is that battle won for 2 years from now, or are there things you can do right now trying to limit or even stop the whole right to work idea?
Mm. Well, it's funny you mentioned recalls because one of the thoughts I had to mention was that we started out with a fairly gerrymandered legislature at the beginning of the session where districts were redrawn, and we ended in lame duck with making recalls more difficult on public office holders. So that's a real interesting 1-2 punch, I think, in the wrong direction of good democratic representation of people. So as far as right to work goes, I think that you'll see people probably pursuing every avenue possible to slow down or block or undo the implementation of that law that was really jammed through the legislature in lame duck under the cover of night literally. And I think that probably the most likely way to do that, given the fact that $1 million appropriation was tagged onto it, in an effort to insulate it from the voters from doing a recall of it, is probably through a citizens initiative or something similar to a constitutional change in 2 years that would say that would undo it.
All right. Before we wrap up, I want to ask you about a couple of joint resolutions that are going to be introduced by Senator Glenn Anderson of Westland. This is according to Gongwer News Service. The first would change the Constitution so that the legislature shall not meet in regular session after the November election in an even-numbered year, which means effectively doing away with the lame duck session. The other is in regards to acts making appropriations for state institutions, which likely stems from the appropriations slipped in by legislative Republicans during the last term to prevent laws from being taken to voters via referendum and possibly overturned. If these were to somehow end up in the House, would they get your support?
I'd say it's likely just based on that description. That's the first I've heard of them, and I respect Senator Anderson's work a great deal. But, I mean, you always want to look at the particulars of it. But I think both of those issues are clearly problems that have come to light. And, you know, lame duck is a very interesting dynamic, and the appropriation piece has definitely been abused when it comes to we think we're passing an unpopular law. We want to shield that from the public from recalling it, so we're just going to tack on really you can tack on a dollar, and that's enough to do it. And it's, I believe, you know, originally the idea was, budgets and appropriations shouldn't be subject to recall because it mucks up the whole budgeting process. Therefore, the court's insulated things that were appropriations from being subject to recall because it would basically, you know, you'd have to go back and refund money that had already been spent, basically. And it's evolved and morphed into this, here's a way to protect some unpopular thing that we think the voters will repeal, like item pricing was an example of that. The emergency manager laws weren't an example of that. So here's a legislature that says, you know, well, we're, you know, and I don't know how much time left we have, but I mean, the interesting dynamic, right, is, well, we listened to the people because they wanted right to work, and so the majority party passed it and then insulated that against $1 million referendum. Yet the public emergency manager, PA4, was rejected by the voters, but quickly now has been returned to a new law and is going to be insulated with $1 million referendum or $1 million appropriation to make it referendum proof. What is that? That's a cognitive dissonance. You know, it just doesn't make any sense if you really truly claim you're listening to will of the people.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add?
I would add that I have a great concern as far as education funding in the next 2 years. This is continued to be a neglected priority. It's absolutely the number one way we move our state forward, and to shortchange that priority is a huge mistake.
Representative Sean McCann, thank you for your time.
Nice to be here. Thank you.